An hour before dawn, we moved in for the last phase. Azar was in command now. I tagged after him, thinking maybe I could keep a lid on. "Don't take this personal," Azar said softly. "It's my own character flaw. I just like to finish things." I didn't look at him. As we approached the wire, Azar put his hand on my shoulder, guiding me over the boulder pile. He knelt down and inspected the ropes and flares, nodded to himself, peered out at Jorgensen's bunker, nodded once more, then took off his helmet and sat on it. He was smiling again. "You know something," he said. His voice was wistful. "Out here at night, I almost feel like a kid again. The Vietnam experience, I mean, wow. I love this shit." "Let's just shh." Azar put a finger to his lips. He was still smiling at me, almost kindly. "This here's what you wanted," he said. "You dig playing war, right? That's all this is. A cute little backyard war game. Brings back memories, I bet, those happy soldiering days. Except now you're a has-been. One of those American Legion-type guys who like to dress up in a nifty uniform and go out and play at it. Pitiful. It was me. I'd rather get my ass blown away for real." My lips had a waxy feel, like soapstone. "Come on," I said. "Just quit." "Pitiful." "Azar, for Christ's sake," he patted my cheek. "Purely pitiful," he said. We waited another 10 minutes. It was cold now and damp. Squatting down, I felt a sudden brittleness come over me, a hollow sensation, as if someone could reach out and crush me like a Christmas tree ornament. It was the same feeling I'd had out along the Song Trabong, like I was losing myself, everything spilling out. I remembered how the bullet had made a soft, puffing noise inside me. I remember lying there for a long while, listening to the river, the gunfire and voices, how I kept calling out for a medic, but how nobody came, and how I finally reached back and touched the hole. The blood was warm like dishwater. I could feel my pants filling up with it. "All this blood," I thought, "I'll be hollow." Then the brittle sensation hit me. I passed out for a while, and when I woke up, the battle had moved farther down the river. I was still leaking. I wondered where Rat Kiley was, but Rat Kiley was in Japan. There was rifle fire somewhere off to my right, and people yelling, except none of it seemed real anymore. I smelled myself dying. The round had entered at a steep angle, smashing down through the hip and colon. The stench made me jerk sideways. I turned and clamped a hand against the wound and tried to plug it up. Leaking to death, I thought. And then I felt it happen. Like a genie swirling out of a bottle, like a cloud of gas, I was drifting upward out of my own body. I was half in and half out. Part of me still lay there, the corpse part, but I was also that genie looking on and saying, "There, there," which made me start to scream. I couldn't help it. When Bobby Jorgensen got to me, I was almost gone with shock. All I could do was scream. I tightened up and squeezed, trying to stop the leak, but that only made it worse, and Jorgensen punched me and told me to knock it off. Shock, I thought. I tried to tell him that. I tried to say, shock, but it wouldn't come out right. Jorgensen flipped me over and pressed a knee against my back, pinning me there, and I kept trying to say, shock, man, treat for shock. I was lucid, things were clear, but my tongue wouldn't fit around the words. Then I slipped under for a while. When I came back, Jorgensen was using a knife to cut off my pants. He shot in the morphine, which scared me, and I shouted something and tried to wiggle away, but he kept pushing down hard on my back. Except it wasn't Jorgensen now. It was that genie. He was smiling down at me and winking, and I couldn't buck him off. Later on, things clicked into slow motion, the morphine maybe. I focused on Jorgensen's brand new boots, then on a pebble, then on my own face floating high above me, the last things I'd ever see. I couldn't look away. It occurred to me that I was witness to something rare.